This week on the design review, we're oh no, actually that's this week. So what is it? I'm so used to that. Right. So we're this week. This week's episode is sponsored by. Okay.
Yeah.
This week's episode is sponsored by Webflow. We're talking about showing your work and project documentation.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of The Design Review. My name is Chris, and with me is Jonathan. And this
Hi.
Week, yes, this week Jonathan prepared an amazing episode on documentation, our favorite topic.
Yes, it is so important. And this is something, again, you know, like with most of our shows, something that I've been learning a little bit more on recently, working at Google. So I wanted to just put all that thought that's so fresh right now down and hopefully share this and help other designers with it. So let's talk about like why this is a problem. Like what are the problems that we're trying to solve with project documentation? Because documentation is added work on top of the work you're already doing.
Yeah.
So if it's just for, you know, fluff or, you know, for some minor improvements, it's really not worth doing because you're almost not doubling, but there's a lot of added work to do this. So for me, the biggest thing is that you need to inform your team and the stakeholders of your progress. You also might need to create some presentations to like show your boss or to get sign off from leadership. You know, maybe it's also to kind of just inform the rest of the company of what you've done to say, hey, you know, we're launching this new thing and this is why we're doing it. And also in the future, maybe it's you, maybe it's another designer, maybe somebody else who needs to come back to this project and carry it on or reference it. So these are like the main reasons why we need project documentation. And really, I find that every company that I've been in, I can utilize this. Like I've worked at startups, you know, I've even been a freelancer before, and all of this has been super, super useful to do.
Yeah, I mean, even
so. In when you worked at Mercedes, was it also something you needed to do?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's especially true in big companies where. There, you know, at any given point in time, you could be interacting with any number of different people. And a lot of the time, especially in big companies, the folks you might be talking to, they don't have any of the context that you have because you're working on it. And so, the documentation is really critical because, you know, I don't know about you, but I sometimes even forget some of the things that we decided, you know, maybe in the beginning.
yeah, same for
so,
sure.
So coming back to documentation that you wrote can actually help you, you know, later on when you're giving presentations or having workshops or things to remind yourself about why you did certain things. Because, yeah,
so true.
You might be like, oh, why? What? You know, you look at something like 6 months later and you're like, why did we do this? And then you go look through your documentation and you're like, oh, yeah, that's why.
Or somebody's like, oh, I thought we were going to do it this way. And you're like, no, I'm pretty sure we all agreed on this other way, but yeah. I can't defend that. It's like my word against yours. Like it was like a few months ago, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that I found that this can help with is, you know, that last minute feedback from stakeholders that changes everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like you're like, okay, we're ready to launch this. So we just kind of want to share this out for final sign off.
Yeah.
And all these people come out of the woodworks to totally poke at like the foundations of your project.
Yeah.
And now you're scrambling, you know, in a few days trying to like make these huge, huge changes and get them all realigned with everybody else. And,
yeah.
And then all the details worked out and it's a recipe for a bad time.
Yeah. Yeah, that also happened. So, well, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but I mean, sharing the documentation with those folks ahead of time can also be helpful, right?
Yeah. And I mean, actually, one thing you mentioned earlier was that, you know, this is really helpful in bigger companies. And it's like there's no way around it in big companies. You have to do this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, you're going to be explaining yourself over and over and over again. And then there's just absolutely no other way to do it to accomplish that goal of keeping all these people in sync with what you're doing. But I find myself thinking about all the times that all the stuff I could have been doing in my startups and wishing I would have had more discipline in this area in startups, because, you know, in a startup, you're in this like really tight knit group, you know, you're working every single day with each other. You're sitting next to each other. You're very fluidly working with each other. And it feels like you don't need any project documentation, but you do for all the same reasons. Just, you know, sometimes that they're like maybe a little bit smaller scale of maybe you're only trying to get sign off from one person, or, you know, maybe, you know, the amount of feedback you get isn't as critical from certain parties, but it's still so critical because you need to, all these problems are true for a startup as well as freelance or even like these really big companies.
Yeah. I mean, I think with startups, in my experience, yeah, it's definitely true where like you sort of get away with not documenting stuff because of the fact that you're working in such a small, tight-knit group. But if you think about like what's going to happen with the startup, that like, in the best case, right, the company is going to grow. And at some point, there's going to be probably like another designer or maybe two more designers or something that join the company. Well, they need to know all the things that you know. And how are you going to do that? In a typical sort of like startup way, is to just sort of brute force it and like have meetings and explain everything in person. But if you just document stuff... you know, like write it down. It could even be like, you could even be super like agile, just write it on a piece of paper or something. I don't know. But
yeah.
If you write it down, then at least, you know, it's in a form that somebody else can sort of benefit from it without you having to be there. So.
Yeah. That's so important. It's just that documentation, because at some point you're going to need to reference it or share it.
Yeah.
And that's true across these different types of situations. And, you know, one of the other things that I experienced at my previous startup that I recently worked at was, you know, me and my, the product group that I'm working in, which was like a PM and a few developers, like we were very in sync and lockstep on our solution.
Yeah.
But because we hadn't had it like fully documented and shared, when we finally came to like, you know, and this was like maybe even like a week between sharing with our boss, or 2 weeks between sharing with our boss, we came to like share this, you know, idea, but it was in our heads. You know, we had been in all those meetings together. We had, you know, gathered all that context. So trying to share that reasoning without really giving that amount of time to fully form it, and how to get somebody who has zero knowledge about this into like the same point of reference that you're at, you fail. Your boss starts asking like the wrong questions, or they don't get it, or you know, they're like, you know, drilling on some like detail that you hadn't thought about. So it can really help with making sure that your boss or stakeholders can get to where you are,
right?
You know, because even if you're right, it doesn't matter. You have, this is a group effort. Like, design is not done in a vacuum. We have to keep all the people in this process in sync with us, because designers, we span that entire process from like, you know, the business side of trying to figure out like what makes sense. We're involved in that. And then we carry it all the way to like, you know, it's actually being developed and is in users' hands, and we're even testing it there. So you need to keep all these people in step of what's coming or what's happened since.
Yep.
Another area that, you know, talking about feedback is that, you know, it's really important to share early and often. We talked about this on so many even recent episodes of this show, because if your work is done in private, you know, you're not getting the credit for your work. And that's really important for promotions, really important for, you know, people gaining your trust at work. So sharing early and often has so many benefits. And documentation is the number one way you're going to be able to do that. You know, it removes the risk and creates shared outcomes. So if you're sharing, you know, all throughout your design process, and the people, the stakeholders that are involved in this project are seeing it and having opportunities to provide asynchronous feedback, and then sometimes in a meeting format giving feedback, then when it's launched, there's no one can say you made a huge mistake. Like, you know, obviously as a designer, you are the sole, it's your responsibility, no matter what. But it all does create this shared responsibility of, we had a lot of opportunity to, give feedback on anything.
Right.
So, I think it also creates, for a designer, creates a lot less stress to say, it's solely my idea and it's sink or swim just on my own ideas. That's not, it's this, now it's this shared project where you're getting feedback from all the important people and we're creating this solution that we all think is a good hypothesis to test.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think also like, it doesn't have to be where like, somebody's looking over your shoulder as you're, selecting colors and things like that. It's really about just documenting your reasoning and, some of the ideas and details so that people are aware of what sorts of things are happening.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I've also found where like in the process of working on stuff, like people get a little bit anxious about what's happening, right? Because obviously not everything you do as a designer is going to be like out in the open. Like sometimes you just need time to like sit down and think about stuff and like put some things together. And yeah, like not everyone's going to be in the room while you're doing that. So creating these documents and sharing them like early on and like just kind of being open with some of the notes and things that you're writing down, just helps people feel like they're included, so that they're not like kept out of it, right?
Yeah, and that's sometimes that's so important we forget, especially as designers, because we're very busy. We have a lot of different things. We talked about that on the fear episode. And how important it is to just have people be in the know. Like there a lot of times we're fearful because we get a lot of bad feedback that's, sometimes more frustrating and more work to address and all that. But this actually helps with that. When you have proper documentation and you're sharing early and often, it really deflates that whole issue because these people know, one is you're and we'll talk about this in the solution, you're presenting it in the right way so that they can get your same point of reference. They also are fully aware of where you are at in the process and what feedback you're looking for. And they've seen it all along the way, so they don't feel stressed that it's headed in the wrong direction. So it can really deflate that whole issue. And actually, speaking of the fear episode, one of the other things this does is it really makes you as a designer focus on all the right elements in your process so that you're not leaving any gaps in any of those pieces, because we always talk about this ambiguity and anxiety comes from ambiguity up the chain of your design process. So if you have creative block on something, you're just not sure like where this is supposed to go next, instead of getting into that fear cycle we talked about in the previous episode, you can instead having this documentation and you hopefully like a template once you've done it once, helps you to focus on each and area that you need to kind of fill out and do next, and it makes it a lot easier and more straightforward. And so last piece on this problem area is, this is documentation is great because of documentation. So, you're able to pick up where you left off. A lot of times you're going to be the main consumer of this document in the future, and you're going to be kicking yourself if you didn't do a good job, because all projects will be revisited at some point, whether by you, another designer, or somebody else on your project. You need to know what was the frame of reference where these decisions were made, what were the next steps. All these kinds of things are going to be super helpful. And then we kind of mentioned it earlier, but defending your design, proving past alignment. If something does come up, you have this document that has, hopefully a lot of comments in it and a lot of activity. You can say, hey, look, we were all kind of part of this, and we can kind of move it forward together, or reference like a decision that was made. And also, once it's time for interviews, we talk about having a work journal in a lot, like
Oh
as a good
yeah.
way to create that. This is a work journal. This is actually sometimes even a better way, because if you're documenting all the data of the project, the outcomes, the reasoning, when it comes time for you to interview somewhere and create a portfolio update or present your portfolio as in slides, where are you going to get that content? Where are you going to get the slides? These are it. You know, right. These are going to be really helpful for you to pull from and say, oh yeah, you know, this is why we did that. Oh yeah, this is the outcome. This is how we were tracking it.
Right.
And then of course, once you've done this all once, templatize it. Yeah. Go back, remove all the content, create a template for yourself that you can consistently update. Every time you have a good idea or somebody comes up with like a question you feel like is like a empty question, you're like, okay, why was that? What could I have added to this slide that would have caught that question and would have made the conversation we're having much more on point? So it gets better over time. And then, you know, share this out with other people, you know, especially if you're looking for, you know, promotions and things like that. This can be a really good way to show your leadership and your influence, as you can help influence the process of other designers as well.
Yeah. Especially when you share it, right? Like if you find, this happened to me quite a lot where, I would send out some documentation or I'd send out a presentation or something like that. And like a certain kind of question would always come back. Well, obviously, you could just keep answering that same question over and over. or you write down the question in sort of like an FAQ style or something like that, and you answer it in the documentation, right? So like, you know, if you find when you present your work, like, you know, the same types of questions keep coming up, well, that's a good opportunity to actually document the answers. Right, document your thoughts on those things and revise your documentation to incorporate the kinds of questions that people are asking, right?
That's such a good idea. I mean, that like each time you're presenting this should be like a trial that you know, you're trying out this. Okay, did this catch those questions? Did this do that? And I love that idea of just saying like, okay, put those like if it's just like a question that's just not being like it keeps coming up and you can't address it in like some other way, like just straight up add the question there and have like an FAQ session. I love that.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're going to talk about the solution, but before we do, we want to talk about our sponsor, for this week's episode.
Okay. So this week we are sponsored by Webflow. With Webflow, you can design with code in a friendly interface that looks like many of existing design tools that you've used. It's powerful and compliant using a lot of solid fundamentals of HTML and CSS. There's incredible animation tools. You can create prototypes and conduct user research. And it's used by professionals all around the world. Right now, you can get 10% off on any annual plan for any new account you create. To get this deal, just sign up at Webflow. It's WFL.io/design review and use the promo code design review.
All right, let's get back into the show. So we're talking about the solution to this documentation problem.
Right.
So when we're talking about solution, there's a lot of different approaches to this because it's just documentation. Chris mentioned writing it down. You know, there's, you know, maybe in the past I've done some really, really long Google Docs, but the way I'm going to talk about today can be kind of, there's a lot of parts that can be used elsewhere, but the way I'm thinking of it is a presentation, you know, Google Slides, a keynote or something to that effect, because this is the way that a lot of people are used to consuming information. And so it's really, really, and then also like when you're giving a presentation, it's already in a presentation format. So that's why I find this to be the most useful form. I've seen other people even, you know, incorporate it into their like Figma file or their sketch file. So yeah. Lots of other ways to do this, but that's kind of what I suggest and what I'm thinking about here.
Yeah, we used Confluence at Mercedes and in other companies in the past that I've worked at, we used more of like a wiki style documentation repository, basically. But
did you still have to create presentations and give presentations to like leadership and whatnot?
Yeah, so the cool thing about using a sort of wiki style tool is all of the talking points basically for the presentations were derived out of the documents that you had online, and then you could also just upload your slides to the wiki. Some tools, I think Confluence actually has macros for like embedding PowerPoint decks in line, so you can actually even look through the presentation like right in the web page without having to like download the slides first. But
Nice.
yeah, I mean the you know whatever tool you use, I mean the important thing is to document it in some way. But yeah, I like this
Yeah.
idea of using slides as a document.
And and the idea with documentation, like especially if you're doing the slides thing, is that it should be able to be consumed without you. Like that's the
Right.
most ideal way. Because like, usually when you're talking about presentations, like say you're giving a presentation about a topic that you're an expert in to like a group of people or a convention or something like that, you want the least amount of text on your screen as possible. You want that all to be verbal because you're guaranteed to be there, and that's the whole point, right?
Yeah.
In this case, yes, there's going to be times where you're giving like a voiceover to a lot of this, but it should be able to be consumed without it.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the content. Oh yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, when you're thinking about presentations too, like one idea per slide. Like
Yeah.
that is like, if there's any one like basic rule to presentations, one idea per slide. Like I've seen
Oh yeah.
too many slide decks where it's like they basically copy and paste a wiki document into like one slide. You know, like nobody's gonna read that, right? So like one idea per slide.
And really, it's also not about the number of slides. Like, don't be scared that your document is like 115
Yeah.
slides. If it's one idea per slide and it's so crystal clear, you're not going to regret. So even if it's having to have three slides instead of one, go for it because that's going to be so much easier to consume and feel a lot less long. Like you might get through it, just as fast too. Like most of the time, that used to scare me is that like, okay, I have 30 minutes to present and I have all these slides. But if you are focusing on this one idea per slide, you'll get through it in just the same amount of time with a lot less hiccups and weird questions and a lot more retention from the people listening.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about content. What should be in this presentation? So first off, have some great, kind of title slide that can act as like the thumbnail and kind of give everybody a quick idea. Okay, what the heck are we looking at here? So title and a date. I personally am a fan of catchy titles that people can remember.
Yeah.
So giving it kind of a thinking of it as like an article, like that has like people get what you're going for, maybe the passion behind the project, something like that. But definitely they should understand that the what of it, like, okay, this is the experience we're talking about, this is the group that's doing it or whatever.
Yeah.
Also, who is working on this project? So obviously yourself should be on there, and then include all the people who've contributed in a significant way. So maybe the PM should be on there, maybe some of the researchers if you have them, maybe the engineers as well, like if you feel like that's helpful.
Yeah, I mean the
And then
project
quit.
team is important, right? Like even if it's just you, but including people you're working with, the whole project team is important because, you know, it's not just you doing this, right? Like it's a whole bunch of people involved.
Yeah, and then now you and those people have like shared interest in what you're putting on these slides,
Yeah.
right?
Well, they might have some things to contribute as well, you know. They might have
Yeah.
you know,
Yeah, and we
like
want to honor those
yeah,
contributions for sure.
totally.
And then the next is the very next slide. I like to have just a quick summary. And I've seen these quick summaries be like two paragraphs. Like, no. Like this should just be like expanded title, like with certain elements in it. So, why and then what and then when. Just in a succinct as possible. Try to get it to like one sentence if possible. Sometimes I'll even like underline and bold certain things that I want to make sure people take away of what we're doing here, just so they don't have to read the whole thing to kind of understand the gist of what you're doing. So it's like the title should give them like one level. The quick summary should give them again another level, and then you'll get into the actual like nitty-gritty details.
Yeah. Writing a summary is also beneficial for you as a document, as the person writing the documentation, because it can help you like kind of think about like in a very succinct way, like why is it that you're even writing all this stuff out, right? If you can't summarize it very succinctly, chances are you haven't really thought about things through enough, right? I've certainly come upon this problem myself, where like I'm trying to summarize what the purpose is of this presentation or whatever, and it's like, huh, it's really complicated. I should probably find a way to like, you know, edit this down or cover fewer topics in this one slide deck and maybe have a different presentation, you know, that incorporates maybe some of those other points for some other group or something like that. But yeah, writing a summary is really, really key to helping not just you give a better presentation, but also everyone else understand why you're even presenting this stuff.
Yeah, that reminds me of, I think it's an Albert Einstein quote, but with Albert Einstein quotes, it's like 50-50 chance he never said it or,
yeah.
You know, kind of a bit. And also I'm probably botching it, but the idea of like, you know, you don't really understand something unless you can explain it to like an 8-year-old or something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's so true. Cause like sometimes I'll even like, you know, because I have like those three pieces, you realize, okay, wait, actually, like, when are we talking about this? I know we want it ASAP, but like, when do we need it to ship by? Like, how can we describe that? You know, and then forcing even the group to help you with that summary sometimes can help focus the project and save you a lot of stress throughout it.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, the timeline is usually what I like to have next, because again, not only is it helpful for other people to see, but it's helpful for you to have it written out so that if there's any gaps or there's any misunderstandings between you and other people, that's going to be apparently clear, you know, to say like, oh, I thought we needed final designs in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, next week, you know, or whatever. So, or it becomes evidently clear that they've asked you the impossible. Okay, so we'll do this and then we'll get final sign off and then we'll ship it in 3 days. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Let's talk about this, you know?
Yeah.
So that's really helpful. And then for other people coming in to this document who need to just consume it, they get an idea of like, oh, okay, this looks like it's really early on, and I feel better because it looks like they have a very fleshed out plan here.
Yeah. Timelines are a good way of communicating also that you as a designer kind of understand the reality of, you know, what the company needs, right? Like if projects, as you know, can kind of go on, they can go on for as long as you want them to in a way. But if you put it down in terms of time and say like, okay, especially if you're presenting to like executives that, you know, you expect to have such and such a thing done in like 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever, it sort of helps assure them that you're kind of cognizant of some of the realities of business and realities of like, you know, getting things done according to a schedule so that, you know, they can kind of ship a product, within a reasonable amount of time. So it's a good exercise to go through to think about timelines and structuring projects around due dates and milestones and things like that.
Yeah. And speaking of them shifting, like this can either be very definitive dates, or it can be milestone based, you know, like it doesn't necessarily need to say, because, you know, sometimes that can be like very frustrating to constantly have to update this slide. It can also just say, okay, you know, past dates, you can always assign a date to, but you might say, okay, well, next milestone is that we need, you know, sign off from the boss. And then, you know, next step after that is, shipping or whatever, like with engineers, like, so like just the overall milestone is also helpful.
Yeah. I mean, the closer you are to today, obviously, the more predictive you can be about like future deadlines. But if you're talking, you know, we had projects, for example, at Mercedes, where it was like, you know, we could know for fairly accurately within like a month or so, like what sorts of things we'd have to do. But, you know, in like 6 months from now, it's like, it's hard to say whether or not, you know, we'd actually get the meetings, you know, with the right sort of people. So you just put that down as like a milestone, and say roughly in this time frame, like in Q4, we expect to have a presentation with, you know, these five different execs, something like that.
Yeah, that's so true. The next section is the context. I like to, and again, this is helpful just as you go through the project to put it in there. But since you're documenting it now, people who are trying to read this asynchronously with you, they're going to be able to get up to speed. So number one, principles. We talked about this in our last episode with ethics and principles. This is where you can put those in and kind of just right off the top declare, like, these are the principles that are going to help define a lot of the design decisions you're going to see from here on out. And that can be, you know, ethics can be as part of that, like whether it needs to be like, this is going to be unbiased or accessible or whatever, that should be there. Declared.
You can even include some of the findings and stuff that helped you develop those principles, right? Because they certainly don't come from nowhere. So, you know, talking about that stuff can be helpful.
Yeah, and actually, one of the things that I've enjoyed doing is, you know, like with like research papers or sometimes with some news articles, where they'll reference something in the footer. I've been starting to do that a little bit, where I'll just add like a one, you know, in brackets, and then in the footer of the slide or something, I'll have the or maybe it's just linked, and then if they click it, they can go off to that research document that we had over there.
Yeah.
And so you can also do that with like some of your reasoning. So maybe it's like you're referencing a heuristic, or maybe you're referencing some case study or whatever that kind of backs you up that you want to, you know, do it this way. Just reference it. It'll look really cool. And sometimes I'll even just do it the way that researchers do it. Well, I'll say like, you know, the name of the researcher and the date, or like, you know, all that kind of stuff, or like the title of the document and the date. And that kind of just helps, again, back you up that the design decisions you're making are trustworthy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of funny because it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I thought I didn't have to write any more term papers after I graduated university, but, but no, it's the same basic idea, right? Like if you're going to make a claim about a principle or whatever, you should cite the work, right? You should cite your research because it's just evidence for you. And it helps you, not just be smarter about decision making, but it also helps other people feel like, oh, yeah, this didn't come from nowhere. They researched all this stuff. And if they have questions, they can either go look up the research on their own, or it gives you some way to have a dialogue about like, hey, these are the findings we had, or whatever. A lot of the times though, I find that like people, if they see like something cited, like that's already enough where they just don't ask any more questions.
Unfortunately, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you didn't put it in, like chances are they're probably going to ask you like, well, where did that come from? But as long as you put something in there that says like, okay, this is the principle or this is the idea and this is like the evidence we looked into, and they're like, okay, yeah, good.
Yeah, actually, I did this with my design challenge presentation on my Google interview.
Oh, cool.
Is, you know, I referenced like the design, like the any kind of principle or case study or whatever that I was like, or even like document about the problem. Like I referenced it, and I think it does help people kind of quickly trust you with like all this stuff, because they can see the work that you've done. Again, this goes back to showing your work.
Yeah.
You know, either you know it in your head, or as part of this solution, you went and looked it up. You can show your work by referencing it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, the person who doesn't do that and who does do that look very similar to the person. There's less data for that person to kind of judge on.
Yeah.
So it can be really helpful. The next area is, you know, like defining just what the problem is. Again, another really big area where things can come up and you can quickly identify problems. Huge, huge thing. What is the problem that we're trying to solve, or even problems that we're trying to solve?
Yeah.
Let's align them. And it doesn't need to be like totally exhaustive, but like, what are the main things we're trying to fix here? What, like, anything you're doing is always trying to solve some sort of problem, whether it's a business problem, a user problem, what have you. Declaring that right out is going to help, because a lot of times what you'll find is either the problem is not clearly defined and or like people aren't aligned on it, or later down the road someone's trying to give you feedback and it's true, and you might even get like pulled off on that solution path, but it's not solving the problems you set out to solve. So right off the bat, declaring what the problems you're trying to solve will help align all that feedback as well.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes also, you know, the the management in the company doesn't even know what the problem is. And so they'll just be like, hey, we want to make X amount of dollars by, you know, next quarter or by the end of the year, and we have all this stuff, you know, what do we do? Well, this is an opportunity for you to kind of like start defining the problem for them and talk about it, right? Because, you know, whether or not you're kind of in the right problem space or not can already help you flesh out what sort of direction to be in. And that can even be like an incredible first step is like, you know, before you get to this presentation stage, have a discussion with some of the management about like, well, what is the problem we need to solve? And, you know, what sorts of things have worked in the past and what things haven't worked in the past. So you can actually kind of figure out what the right sort of problem is.
And the next area is who are the users? And yet again, this is an area that can help really align and align your team and catch any problems beforehand. Yeah. Because if you're not aligned on who is this really for, you might make different design decisions. So if your product is very well understood, then this might be fairly easy, and maybe it's like you're repackaging that. But kind of paired with the next item, which is like, you know, what are the core user journeys? That's really what's behind this is, you know, not necessarily like these like personas, which sometimes can be really just content fluff that doesn't really affect the design decisions or influence them in the correct way. But it can be really helpful. You know, if you're saying, okay, well, you know, we have these type of users who are coming in fresh, and we have expert users, and we have, or in the frame of reference of the problem, you know, it's like, okay, we have a settings page that is broken. You know, okay, I'm somebody who needs this setting because of X. You know, like that helps define the problem better. And that's really what this is about. It's not about talking about waxing poetic about who your users are, but what can we say about them that's going to help us design the solution here?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we all sort of work towards being a little more concrete or specific about the types of users that you're designing for. One of the worst situations that I was in was like working with a product manager, and I was like, okay, well, who's the customer for this product? And they were like, well, it would be anybody that wants to pay for a product like this. I was like, it's like, that's not a customer, right? Like, who is the person? What are they interested in? You know, there's a bunch of like kind of demographic information you can look into. There's a bunch of other sort of like just personality, psychographics. There's all kinds of things you can look into. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if your answer to who are the users is anybody who wants to pay for this product, that's not a customer.
That's the definition of a customer. Yes, yeah. But not who they are. So the next thing is like that those core user journeys can be really helpful. Like just defining like what are all the tasks that someone needs to do as part of this problem and solution space. That again really helps align the group, and helps you identify all the different potential new screens or new experiences that need to be created. And also identifying the gaps in that experience can be really helpful. After that is, you know, defining what's going to success going to look like. This can be part of that problem slide, or it can be separate, but saying, okay, here is what success looks like. If we make X amount of dollars, this many conversions, you know, if our NPS score can be changed by this much, whatever it is, like having it documented is super helpful. And then what are the metrics we're going to use to track that?
Yeah.
Sometimes you have a perfect metric. Sometimes you have metrics that give you a hint at that, and kind of documenting that all down will help you as you design to say, okay, well, this is a nice improvement, but is it going to affect this metric that we all talked about? No. Okay. Well, let's think about that. Cause maybe it's like, sometimes it's like reducing the amount of calls to help. It's like, okay, this is a really cool experience, but it's actually going to increase the calls to help, you know? That's a really good, important one. And then Also, as part of that, well, what data do we have now already? Like, if there is a current experience that, or maybe it's just market data, like something that represents the status quo, if you can find it, or if you have some sort of hint at it through other data or case studies, show that there.
Yeah, sometimes you can also connect the existing data back to the problem, right? So like you can say like the problem is that customers are not happy with the existing product, and the data we have is, significant amount of customer service calls after every new feature launch. And that goes a long way to like supporting each other. And then you can talk about, when we think about success, well, how are we going to measure it? Well, we hope to actually reduce the number of customer service calls by, 70%, something like that. Because it's not like the data you have is just sort of like an island unto itself, right? Like part of what helped you figure out the right problem is the fact that there's certain bits of data that you have in the company that point at, some particular issue, right? If everything was great, right, you wouldn't be here working on this problem, right?
Yeah, and sometimes this will also highlight a disconnect. Maybe the stakeholder or your boss was like, we need to update the screen because people hate it. And then you look at the data and you're like, this has almost exactly the same as everything else, or it actually has 0.01 lower. And it can help, again, all of these initial context screens helps align the team on like, what are we even doing here? And then the next area is research and analysis. So if we're talking about the overall design process, defining the problem is probably that first area. This is sort of like exploring the problem area around. So like, narrowing in the problem area. So what are the opportunity areas that you identified in all this context? What are the things you want to change? So, in the it, let's get put the example of the customer service calls. You said, okay, well, it seems like with every feature launch, it's a it, they're really big changes. And again, this might be based off of research that you've done, user research. Maybe you're also noticing that every time there's a feature launch, there's a really long download, and kind of just pointing out all these opportunity areas. And then, again, with data that you have to support that, maybe to support some of the other things you might want to do. And then competitive analysis can be helpful to say, okay, here's also how other people have solved it in the past, things like that. So any kind of research and analysis that you can do about the research, put it in that. So kind of say, okay, we've defined the problem, and then we've also kind of looked at like how we can narrow that in, and then talk through exploration. So this is where most of the time our head is at as a designer. Like when somebody says go design something, this is where we like jump in, because we either feel like we have enough of that context, we have enough of that analysis already in our head, or we did it really quick before we jumped into our design tool and started our way. But or when somebody asks us, hey, can you present the information about your redesign? The people usually just go straight to like putting these slides in here. So, as you can see, there's already been a ton. It should be a ton of stuff. And if people already know, it's a slide deck. They can like quickly go through. Or if you know your audience that you're presenting to, you can either skip those slides or go through them quickly. So don't be scared of having all these extra slides. They're so helpful. But solutions. So first thing I like to have is like an overview of all the changes we're proposing. So that can be like a user flow diagram. It can be like just straight up text callouts of all these different things. It can be like a quick kind of like highlight of a bunch of screens, and just give people an idea of like, hey, like this is the kind of the overview of what we're going to change here. Then go into each and every one. So for each screen that you're going to change, have a single slide, like Chris said, like one idea per slide. If it's like a three-step flow, have 4 slides. So one kind of like, okay, well, this is the 3 steps that they would go through, and then one slide, and then one slide, and then one slide. And on each of those slides, have a title. Again, I love catchy titles. I like to name my solutions something catchy, and it helps people remember it, talk about it in meetings and stuff like that, and kind of encapsulate the idea. A short description of what you're getting at, obviously the images. If it's a redesign, make sure you include the old screen. Having the context of where this is in the overall picture, so whether that's just a line of text to say, like, you know, almost like a breadcrumb or a little image or something like that. And then pros and cons. Like, if this is a proposed solution, having the pros and cons to say, okay, here's the positives if we do it this way. Here's some of the negatives I see of if we do it this way, or if somebody adds to it, either one of those, add it in there. And then the status, like, this is in progress, this is in the concept phase, you know, this is going into production or whatever, so that people kind of know to freak out or not, or whatever. Anything you'd add to that list, Chris?
I think including some, like, feasibility and, you know, talking to engineers.
Assumptions.
And things. Yeah, like, just figure out, like, you know, when you're showing, you know, if you're redesigning something, for example, and if, especially if it's particularly, like, ambitious, talking to some engineers and, like, including their feedback about it in this, at this stage, can actually be really helpful, right? Because, you know, the pros could be like, hey, we're improving the user experience by a lot, but the cons is, like, you know, it means initially maybe a little bit more, like, technical investigation to make sure that the solution will work. Maybe a little bit revision to the code base, things like that, so that people are aware of the types of challenges and potential, like, complications that can arise from trying to do something more ambitious. It doesn't mean that it doesn't always mean that, like, a solution will be shot down just because it's a little bit ambitious. It just means, like, do enough work to make sure you understand, like, the benefits and side effects of doing something like this.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of design work is not what's the best, like, the most amazing thing we could do here. It's a lot of times it's what's the least worst way we can accomplish this, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's so many, like you said, like, so many different considerations, right? Like, design is very contextual. Like, a lot of times when people ask us, we say it depends, right?
Yeah.
So having that documented on that screen will help avoid a lot of those questions that are incorrect or are not helpful in furthering the project. So, you know, like you said, it might be like, oh, well, why do I go with that screen? Like, I thought, you know, we were going to do X, Y, or Z. It's like, well, when we talk about feasibility, we can do three of these in the time we could do that solution. And we don't think it's incrementally that much better of an experience. So that's why we're going with, you know, so
yeah.
Having all of that documented on that slide helps you remember it, and then also helps other people get in sync with you.
Yeah.
And the next area here is the prototype link. So we talked about Webflow as a great opportunity for this. You know, if you're prototyping it up in Figma or something else, including a link to that. I like to kind of mock it up in a device to kind of show that it's, but you can also just take a screenshot of the prototype or something like that, plop it in there, make it a link. It's really helpful if you know, people just jump out and say, okay, after you've described everything kind of one by one by one, let them see it all together. A lot of times that'll change some of the context of it. And then after all that, make sure you include what are the next steps.
Yeah.
So this can be kind of reiterating that timeline, what kind of feedback you want. It can also be talking about, you know, if you have launched something, what are the current or, you know, known gaps in that experience, things that you know you want to iterate on next. This is helpful to, again, to like show that like work is never finished. It's not like you're designing, you're not like this prophet from above. It's like, I've solved everything with my design. It's perfect and it's amazing. But instead saying, you know, like, okay, this was our iteration. We know these gaps exist and we need to like, move forward with them. Maybe it's some of those cons, you know, can be captured there as well. Like say, okay, we need to address some of these and we can fix some of these. And last but not least, is archive. So as you, this document is a living document. It's going to change all a lot throughout your process. Especially older designs, like in that design category, put them into the archive so that people can kind of see the older versions of things and whatnot. Sometimes, you know, slides that were not very helpful, but maybe informative, you can move them down there. So I like to just not delete stuff, but instead of just kind of move it over there so that people can thumb through it if they need to reference like, oh, I thought, you know, what about this older version or this older decision? Like you'll have it in there.
I want to go back to what you talked about with next steps, because I have maybe a little bit of a controversial thing to bring up here. Yeah, so sometimes you work in a company that doesn't support like doing UX research or like usability testing, right? Like you've been in this situation before, right? John?
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that you can do, and this is where it gets controversial, is for your next steps, put in there that you're doing usability testing. And the reason is because if they don't believe in doing it, and you say, hey, the next step we need to take here is usability testing, either it gets them thinking about, well, why are we doing this, right? And then you can have a discussion about it. Or they just agree to it and don't say anything, and then you can do it.
I like that approach. Better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
Right? Because
I agree with that. Like in the companies that I've worked at that were not fully supportive, well, I guess there's two. So like companies that weren't thinking about it before, but were supportive, and then companies that weren't supportive, like I had to like really work against it. And in both cases, we got research done.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of times as designers, we want to say yes to everything, but, and you know, we, I mean, in the sense that we want to kind of please everyone, but you really need to be the leader, a design leader, if in your project or your company, because they don't know.
Yeah.
You do. So you need to tell them, yeah, we need research for this. Yes, we need research to find out this. And if you can't describe it in a way that convinces them, most places that contextual, like most like scenarios, there we go, that I've been in, it's because like I wasn't describing it well. Once I had like my reasoning and what we needed and why we're going to de-risk, how it's going to de-risk us and what we're going to find out, what we're going to use that with, they were supportive of it. Like how much money we could spend, how much time we could spend. That was, you know, sometimes still under consideration and trying to figure out a creative solution, but they were on board, right? And then we were saying, yeah, okay, well, here are some different options. We could do it this way, but it's going to, you know, we're not, there's going to be some risk involved. We won't be able to trust the data as much, you know, only doing 8 people. But if we do it through this agency, they'll do it with, you know, 50 people and 100 people, and it'll cost this much. So like giving them some options too can be really helpful. But very, very much agreed. And also like with the milestone one at the beginning, we were talking about that can also align your team with like following a design process,
right?
Because we talked about this in the fear episode. Like there's a lot there that a lot of people who are not designers don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting it out in front of them will help them say, oh, okay, well, this person needs to go do X, Y, and Z, and then we'll see the designs. And that's why it's going to take 3 weeks. That makes sense, because I can see here they're going to be very busy the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, 100%.
And then also in the grand scheme, you know, the more often you're including it in your presentations and things, especially if it's a next step, right? But the more often you're talking about it with people, the more it is that they'll get used to thinking about that, right? That, you know, if every time you present work, you're talking about the next step is to do usability testing, well, they're going to start thinking about it when you're presenting, and they're going to start anticipating it. And then that's how you eventually establish a process. You say, okay, after all this work, all this exploration, all this concepting, whatever, the next step is always to do usability testing. There you go. You've just done it.
So recapping everything we've learned today, you need documentation. You need documentation for yourself, to improve your project, to improve how you work with others, improve your sign-offs and get more successful sign-offs to your work. And then, you know, all the post-referencing of that work. There's so many benefits. And yes, it's extra work. You have to create all this process. But at the end, I promise you it'll actually save you a lot of time. It's going to make you focus on a really good design process, increase the quality of your work, and help you to show yourself as a leader, a design leader within your projects. And maybe even get promoted. Who knows?
Yeah.
You can get promoted and thank the design podcast. So speaking of that, as we end here, we absolutely love your feedback. So If you love the show, if it's helped you at all, head over to iTunes, search Design Review, and give us a write us a review. It could be short, could be long. We love those, absolutely love those, and they help increase the status of the podcast, which helps us get more sponsors. It helps us to feel good about creating more of these, and all around is going to be really, really helpful.
Yeah, definitely want to shout out thanks to Webflow for sponsoring this episode. Again, it's a really great tool. We've already talked a lot about it, so I won't say any more, but make sure you jump in there, wfl.io/designreview, and use the promo code designreview.
You can also find us online at designreviewpodcast.com, and our Twitter handle is dr_podcast. I'm design UX UI.
I'm machine human. You can
I think that's...
chat with us there.
Okay.
Oh yeah, there's also, I also want to hype this again, officehoursproject.com. You can sign up for mentorship. There's a bunch of great mentors, myself included. You can, it's free to sign up. It doesn't cost you anything other than your time and our time. but yeah, I mean, everybody has these sorts of situations where you just need some help. You need someone to talk to you about something. And if you, for some reason, you know, listen to the Design Review podcast and you still have questions about what to do and you're not sure where to get answers, go in there and like find a mentor and get the help you need. So mentorship is great. Officehoursproject.com.
All right, and that's another episode down into the books. We will see you here in 2 weeks, and have a great day. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Ha ha ha.